Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Resilience by Faith podcast. Today I have a very special guest with us, and we are steady continuing our series on moms, veteran moms, grandmoms. I'm interviewing all moms. So if you're interested in being on the show and you would like to take part in this, send me an email at resiliencebyfaithpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Instagram at resiliencexfaithpod, or you could find me on my regular channels. Everything will be down in the description box. But I am interviewing today Miss Jessica Sharma. She is amazing already, I can tell, but I'm gonna let her interview herself because she's doing some amazing things, and she also has a podcast that I would love you guys to support. So Jessica, tell us about you.
So I am a first-time mom to a beautiful one-year-old daughter who's absolutely energetic and just all bounce and just amazing, basically. But to put a little bit of context about who I am and what I've been doing. So I'm from the UK, from a sort of, I in the county I live in is quite farmerish. So it's Norfolk. If anyone's out there who listens from, who isn't from the UK, it might be known for having the Queen, who lives in Sandringham. And I was a nurse for quite a number of years, working within the NHS. And I decided after my pregnancy, when I went on to maternity leave, not to go back to nursing, because it's been quite a rough ride with COVID and everything else. So after that, I decided to do a career change, which has been quite difficult when you've just gone through pregnancy and you've got a new baby. So that's been really, really challenging. And I decided to go for a career change. Well, I had a lot of different things that I was bouncing around, but I'm predominantly doing a lot of content creation. So I've started my own podcast. I can say a bit more about that later if you like. I've also been doing quite a lot on social media and just sort of testing the waters. So that's really where I'm at the moment. The job market's been really, really tough, particularly if you're a mum as well. So predominantly after my maternity leave did finish, I've basically been like a stay-at-home mum until a job does transpire. But that's been amazing, and I can work on my content creation on the side, so that's been really, really good as well. So that's basically me.
Yes, tell us what kind of like support system, because they always say it takes a village. So what does your village look like and how do they support you?
I have a very amazing village because I have an amazing husband who's really, really good. And we're lucky because he works remotely. So he's stay at home. So he gets to see us at lunch. It's really great. We can all have lunch together. I also live with my mum. So she sort of went for a divorce and then came to live with us because the market was really, really expensive. And we decided where we live, we have a lot of land, so we could get a little lodge built on the back. So she lives in the lodge. So it makes childcare really, really easy because she sort of comes in and helps me with little one, and vice versa. We sort of help each other when we go on shopping trips. It's absolutely amazing. And then I've also got my husband's family who sort of live about an hour away from me, and they come and pop in. And basically I've just got a really nice little community because we all sort of just helping each other out. And I'm really, really lucky to have my mum living so close. I completely know that is just so, so amazing. I try not to take advantage though, because I know my mum, she's sort of coming to retirement and she also wants some time to herself, but we all sort of, so tonight we're all having a meal together. So we try to cook all together and have meals and share them. And it's just really, really nice to get to see her as often as I do.
Yes. Now tell us, like, going back when you found out, okay, we're expecting, how did things kind of flow from there? What was your pregnancy like? How did you feel? How was your health? But also when it came time to give birth, were you more of a C-section? Did you give a vaginal birth, or were there any complications or any struggles during that time?
So when I found out I was pregnant, so the interesting story, I talk about this quite a lot. I actually kind of knew I was pregnant before I even took a pregnancy test because I follow fertility awareness. So I track my cycles and I had a number of high temperatures, and by then I normally have a temperature drop. I knew instantly without taking a test that I was pregnant. So that was absolutely amazing. In general, my pregnancy wasn't too bad. Obviously, a lot of sickness, like most women do in their first trimester. Went off a lot of the usual things, but no sort of general cravings or anything. The worst thing that I did struggle with during my pregnancy was a lot of sort of pelvic pain, especially when I got to the third trimester, which meant that when I was nursing, I sort of had to finish up my nursing career a lot earlier. I kind of left before I was close to sort of giving birth because I just couldn't walk around. At that point, I was doing kind of ad hoc shifts in the hospital as a nurse. And because I'm quite crazy, I've always loved A&E and intensive care. I was doing a lot of shifts in A&E, which is really like on your feet and running around. And I was getting asked quite a lot of scary things to do considering I was pregnant, because as it is everywhere, nursing's always a short-staffed profession that's asking a lot of you. So then I sort of left 2 months before I gave birth. Spent a lot of time waddling around the house. Now, I'm quite an active, fit person, so I'm always exercising. So I had to spend the last 3 months kind of just like laying down in bed. I had to eat on my side because I could feel her feet under my ribs all the time, and I just couldn't move around very much. And I felt I was, that was stressing me a little bit as well. But we got through that. And then coming up to when I gave birth, I didn't give birth on my due date, but what happened was I was booked in to see my midwife, and she did some really nice sort of like massages after you're 40 weeks pregnant. Where I lived, I don't know if it's different from county to county and from country to country, but they can offer you a couple of sort of therapies that you can have to try and help, maybe start something. And I think I was 40 weeks and 2 days, and she did kind of like this aromatherapy massage thing, went into labor straight away. I was like, yeah, honestly, I'd felt a couple of twinges that morning, but I went to go see her and she did sort of these pressure points and things like that. And then it just started getting more and more intense. And I was like, oh, right, these are contractions. So I don't know, she worked her magic. She was the most amazing midwife ever. And then what happened was I decided to give birth at home. And they said, well, it's hit and miss. If we've got enough people available, sort of an ambulance and enough midwives, you can do it. Because I was very low risk. And I did it, which was really amazing. So I gave birth at home. It took about 24 hours. I had midwives come out in the night. They said, you're not sort of very much progressed, so we'll come back. And then the midwife who'd seen me and done the massage came back, and she was there throughout the whole sort of labor for the rest of the day. So it was in the afternoon that I ended up, she actually was born. But I tried to, obviously, when you're at home, your pain relief options are limited. So I'd had some paracetamol maybe like early on in the labor. And they also said I could have some medication, which I've already got in advance at home. So some morphine. Before they said you're too early on to have it when I got them out in the night. And then when they came back late in the day, they were like, you're quite far on. I don't think it's a good idea to have the morphine. And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, I think you're going to have this little one in, sort of a couple of minutes. And I was like, okay. Well, it ended up being a couple more hours later. So all I actually ended up having, I didn't even have gas and air because I had one puff of it and I vomited. So I literally just had paracetamol and that was it. No pain relief. And I was actually surprised with myself. I had a little hot water bottle on my back. But I have to say, it makes a huge difference when you've got amazing midwives as to what you can actually feel capable. There was one point where I begged for everything, basically, but they were like, you're almost there, you're almost there. So they literally did everything at home. I got through the whole birth. They even had to, at one point, break my waters because my waters were not breaking. They broke the waters, and then within an hour, my little girl was born. The saddest thing actually about the whole thing, it was lovely, it was an amazing experience because it was literally right in my bedroom that I gave birth, was because she needed a little help breathing to begin with, and she was born with a little bit of meibomian, I think it's called. The midwife said, look, I think we should just take her in hospital to be checked over. Well, we went into hospital. They took some blood and they said, oh, her infection markers are a little bit raised, which then meant we had 5 days in hospital of antibiotics. And then following that, we were also, at the end, they took swabs because it was routine. We found that we were MRSA positive as well, which then meant we had to have treatment at home, and it delayed my little girl's tongue tie being done, and it made breastfeeding really, really difficult. But we did get there eventually with breastfeeding, but 3 months of pain. But so it was quite a bit of a journey. It was so lovely. And then at the end, it got a bit rocky. So,
yes, we never know. But oh my goodness, you did all the whole birth without any pain.
It was painful, but just no pain relief.
Yes, no pain meds. Yes, let me rephrase that. No pain meds. Yes. No epidural. Yes. So you are a trooper, number one. You are a true trooper. For sure.
Don't get me wrong. I went in saying, you know, there was a point, and I think they call it transitional, or I'm not quite sure, but I went, there was a point where I was literally like begging them to take me to hospital and give me every single thing that I could. But I truly don't think I could have got through it with that minimal amount of pain relief if my midwives hadn't been the most amazing midwives I've ever had, or, well, I've not had midwives before, but really amazing midwives. And also I had an amazing support network. My husband was there. He was amazing. My mother was also there on the day, and she was absolutely great. So I couldn't have done it without all of them together. It's just a shame the experience afterwards when I went into hospital became a little bit patchy after that. But, you know, it happened and we got over it.
It happened. Yes, and what a blessing. I mean, we have two generations watching another generation come into the world. That is so beautiful. I definitely say, what made you want to take the midwife route? Like, do you know someone who had a midwife or recommended it, or were you just doing some research? What made you ultimately decide to go that route?
I think I just, generally, we are under, I don't know the full ins and outs of being in the UK and with the NHS system. I think generally you're under a midwife anyway, unless you're high risk and you've been referred to a consultant. With respect to the home birth, I chose that because, I think the midwife spoke to me in depth about it. Like I said, she was really, really great, really, really knowledgeable, this lady. Honestly, I can't thank her enough. And she said, actually, you might feel better being at home because in hospital, there's a lot more noise. There's a lot more going on. And obviously, being a nurse, I've been in hospital nurse. I think that would have just made me more anxious because I know everything that's going on in the hospital. Whereas at home, your adrenaline levels are a bit lower. You're calmer. You're in your own setting. I love my home. This is going to sound weird. I love being in my bedroom because I'm the most comfortable there. I lay on my bed. I love reading books. I feel most comfortable on there. And so I think that's what made the birth so special, because I was in a setting that I felt more comfortable. Whereas if I've been in a hospital, sometimes there's been periods in my career where it's been quite stressful. Being in a hospital would have just reminded me of that. And a lot of people are coming in and out, whereas this wasn't like that. It was a nice, beautiful, sunny day. I could hear the outside birds. They could open the sliding doors, give me a bit of fresh air, and it just made it so much calmer.
Okay. Did she have like the pool? The pool?
I didn't go for the pool because I wasn't sure. Only because they had said to me, there may not be availability for you to have a home birth. So I was like, what if I pay all that money out for a pool, because we have to pay for it. I don't think that's something you get with a home birth for free in the UK. And then I can't have that home birth. So I could be a bit of a Scrooge, I'm not going to lie. I did get in the bath at about 2 a.m. in the morning. And then sort of I just stayed in there for a little while. But then it got a little bit cold because there's no heaters in near my middle bathroom, basically, where the bath is. And actually at that point, because it was in April still, it was quite cold in the mornings, but it got warmer in the day. So it was really, really cold at night, and then it got really, really hot in the day. So I would have probably done something with the water birth, but I didn't like that uncertainty of spending money and then having to sort of not be able to utilize it. I also have dogs, and like I was thinking, red up at this pool, there's a lot of dog hair everywhere. The bedroom was like the cleanest place. But
Okay, so that's so much eye-opening. Not so much, but that's really eye-opening for me, because over here in the United States, of course, you get to choose like an OBGYN. You go to the OBGYN. You can choose to come in the hospital and deliver. But now, like, I'm seeing it more and more often on Instagram, TikTok, and other places. People, they go, maybe their midwife does it, but they go and they buy a blow up pool and they just fill it with water in the house. And then you get in it in your living room. And one girl in particular that I follow on Instagram, you guys, other people who are listening in the audience, you probably know about Kiara, the leader. She's in Atlanta, and her husband, they're like personal trainers. So they help people lose weight, basically shape up their body, tone up, and different things, and at home. And she also had a midwife, but she had to like go out and look for her, search, or maybe it was recommended. But I think the same one that delivered her second one delivered her third one. And when you said you're automatically put under a midwife in the UK, that just made me think, oh yeah, the healthcare system is different than what it is over here. So it's like, I'm like, okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around
it.
That you're
don't
already
get me
assigned.
Wrong.
You're
the one.
Yes, assigned to one. Yes.
I think it is either, I'm not sure if you can actually request the end of the consultant. I could be wrong. But I think unless you actually request it, or you're high risk, or you've got some mitigating factors, you're probably just going to go down a midwife net route. So we have sort of little pathways. So they say, okay, because you're low risk, that's what I gain. I could be wrong. Right. Maybe there's going to be another lady who will correct me, because I'm a nurse. I never got to speak to midwives very much until I actually had my own baby. But if there's nothing sort of serious, they'll be like, well, you can have a midwife and they'll see you throughout your pregnancy, and there's no need to sort of get a doctor involved. So
cool. So is it like for your prenatals and like where they do the Doppler and they listen to fetal heartbeat, all that is done by a midwife?
Yeah, all of that was done by a midwife, except scans were done by a sonographer, so someone who's but everything else was done midwife. I never saw a doctor once throughout the whole pregnancy, because I was so low risk, you know. I didn't have problems, but obviously if you've got problems, like maybe you got guess if you've got a clotting disorder or the diabetic, I don't know the full ins and outs, you might probably see a doctor more often, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, that opened my eyes a lot. Now I want to go read up on all the things.
Again, if I'm wrong, then I do apologize, because I'm not delved into the system. It's only from what I've heard when I had my initial consultation. So, I only saw a midwife throughout the whole thing, and I was happy with that. If I felt like there was anything I was really concerned about. And by the way, my midwife was really, really good. I had complete trust in her, and that was really important. She'd been a clinical educator as well as far as I'm aware. She's been a clinical educator in hospital, which made it even sort of better for me, because I did a year as a clinical nurse educator. So we sort of, you know, I just felt an instant sort of, you know, satisfaction with her work, you know. So she was great.
Yes. Now, like throughout or after the birth, did you have any like emotional irregularity, depression or any anxiety? The anxiety just starts, because now you're like, oh, I'm a mom now, so the role changes. Did you have any struggles with your mental health?
Yeah, so I've had quite a lot of struggles in my mental health in the past. So oddly enough, I don't think they were too bad throughout my pregnancy. I was a little bit anxious about certain things at certain times. I'm trying to recall. It all went so quickly, and it was all so fuzzy for me now thinking about it. I guess a lot of my anxiety was, you know, is this going the right way? Am I doing the right thing? I guess for a while, one of the things that I probably struggle with is, for a while I thought I wanted a boy. And, you know, there's that big thing about gender disappointment or whatever. But actually, when she got here, I didn't care. And now I'm sort of a year down the road. I just love her. I couldn't actually think of her as being any different but my amazing little girl. And, you know, she's just so amazing. But at that point, sometimes it comes and triggers you. But actually, it's been absolutely fine. You know, I had that for a fleeting moment. And then some of the anxiety was around sort of, would I be able to breastfeed? Will it be really difficult? How is life going to be? I think when you come up to your first one, you're just like, what is life going to be like after this? Because you've never known anything differently. But now I'm on the other side of it. I'm just like, well, I can't imagine life without her now. So it was really, really weird. But yeah, I think there was a bit of anxiety about giving birth as well, you know, because you don't know what that pain is going to be like if you've never given birth. And even right. I think like now I've kind of forgotten what that pain's like. But yeah, it was literally like extraordinarily the worst period cramps ever, you know. And I think I'm pretty sure I had a lot of back labour as well, because it seemed to be coming from the back quite a lot. But it went swimmingly, thankfully.
Yes, thankfully. After she got here, because I know you said she had the tongue surgery or she had a tongue tie.
Yeah.
And then we went on to breastfeeding and we got over that hump. And now that she's one, looking back on that, would you say like that whole situation and things like the decision to do breastfeeding versus formula and different things, because like that's a big thing in and of itself, a big tobacco. They're like, well, it's better to breastfeed than to give formula, and then some people feel vice versa. How did that situation go with the surgery for the tongue tie, and then what were some challenges you met during breastfeeding, and did you ever get discouraged? Like, I know a lot of people talk about, I'm not producing enough milk, or they use different supplements or teas to help their milk production, and they have a lactation specialist and different things. Did you have that, or was it pretty much you were okay with your production?
This is a whole, I could do a whole episode on this because it was really, it was quite emotional. I was very determined to be breastfeeding, very, very determined. Initially I had to combi feed, so we were very reliant on formula at the beginning. So when I was in hospital, which is where I had an amazing birth, and then I had a patch experience in hospital, partly was because of the feeding dilemma, because I was in hospital and they said, oh, you want to try and feed, and she was, I had a couple of staff who were like just putting her on and off the breast a lot, and it was really, really painful. And I also, unfortunately, we do suffer from having quite a shortage in the NHS, not just of nurses, but, you know, midwives and across it. There wasn't always enough staff to give us that support that we required in the early stages for breastfeeding. Some of them weren't always, you know, I had the most amazing midwife at birth, and then some of them, you know, it's like all staff when you go into anywhere. It depends on how they are. I was trying to say, like, slow down, this and that. There was evidently something wrong, and that's before they actually noticed that she had tongue tie. And then on day three, I had some of the amazing support workers. So I would say there's amazing registered staff, but some of the support workers were absolutely amazing as well. So I want to give credit to them. They came and said, look, she's got tongue tie, and we'll refer her to, there's a practitioner who was then, we've got a lot of nurses starting to do more advanced things like the tongue tie release in the UK, mm-hmm. and they referred her to her. Unfortunately, because we did find out that we had MRSA, which is now sort of resolved, we had to wash ourselves and all this stuff, she couldn't actually go for her tongue tie release until she was MRSA negative, because obviously you don't want that in the wound. Problem with that was we had a lot of miscommunication from GPs, hospitals and all of that when it was when we were trying to get our swabs clear. No one seemed to want to take ownership of getting us infection free, if that makes sense. I don't know if you'd call it infection. Obviously I'm not a microbiologist expert. Eventually we finally managed to get our swabs. The community midwives were really, really helpful, who were also the ones who supported me through my birth. Finally managed to get that. She had a tongue tie procedure, but it was kind of a bit sort of, for the first couple of weeks I had to give formula but keep trying to latch, because I couldn't, the absolute pain. Obviously she's trying to learn, and then she's trying to do it with this tongue tied. So we had that done, and then it was still quite painful. And what happened was I got quite a few bouts of mastitis, Well, I got mastitis once, which I needed antibiotics for. I've had quite a few gold ducts before, and they were really, really painful. The one time I got mastitis, I literally was like clutching my breast. I went in the shower. I had quite a bit of ibuprofen, which they said was fine, you know, for me to have as breastfeeding mum. And still, I was having to give formula. So I was getting really stressed about it. I was like, I really want to breastfeed, blah, blah, blah. And I was getting upset. I was getting emotional. Thankfully, my mum came in and she was really supportive. My husband was really supportive. But for a couple of months, and I'd have to say, if you can make it through those first 3 months, you might have a really good chance of being able to breastfeed on the longer term. Not everyone, obviously. But my sister had already had a baby and she had said, look, if you can get through the first 3 months. And she was right. By the time I got to the 3 month mark, we were sort of doing half and half of breastfeeding and formula, and I was slowly whittering down the formula. But in the meantime, after I got those clogged ducts and mastitis, which I ended up having antibiotics for, I got breast thrush, so I had to put cream on my nipples, per se. That seemed to clear up. And then we got to the 4 months and things all just seemed to click. So it all just seemed, she seemed to get better at it. Her tongue tie had resolved. She seemed to understand what she needed to do. And so breastfeeding all just fell in. But there were times where I thought that my supply wasn't good enough. Obviously, if she can't latch properly to then draw out the milk, my supply might not sort of come in as much as it would. And I didn't know what to do. There were times where I was getting conflicting information. I was trying supplements. So I think I went on supplements called Legendary Milk, which were really good actually. They ended up helping a little bit. I tried lots of water. I was eating loads of oats. I think really the thing that helped me the most was just latching her constantly. Like whenever she needed, every 2 hours, or if she was hungry, I'd latch her, because really the best person to get your milk supply up is probably your baby. I'd have to say, yeah, there's a lot of pumps that can do a really good job, but I've always found that the best person in doing so has always been my baby. But it was very, very rocky and I was very emotional. And I think not only have you got the emotions from all your hormones settling, I've once heard that, you know, after you give birth, your hormones drop so low. And I don't know if this is right. I'd have to check the research. They drop so low that it's almost likened to being close to the menopause. So you're kind of all that. And then you've got the emotions of like having a new baby, being really tired, trying to breastfeed. It's like, I kind of, it's like trying to be in a constant state of, you know, you've got a constant state of just so much going on that I can completely understand it. If you don't have the right support, you're not going to continue breastfeeding because it's just so hard at that time. We are lucky. I couldn't get the employer maternity pay, but I could get statutory maternity pay from our government. So I was lucky that I had that support and my husband was able to support me as well. But it, so I wasn't worried so much financially, but I can imagine that if you have the pressure to sort of go back to work, like I know you guys don't get as much maternity leave as we do in the UK, that's almost an impossibility of trying to breastfeed for a lot of people. So yeah, it was very rocky and there was a lot going on at the start. We now evened out, but then I hit the next hurdle when you get to 6 months or 8 months. It's like, when do I breastfeed around given solids? You know, I know you give milk as the main sustenance up until a year, but every stage of it is one other thing that you're kind of like thinking about and thinking, well, now what do I do? You know, they're eating solids. When do I feed them? What times? How much do they need? Constant questions. Unfortunately, my mum has been really good. And again, my husband's been really amazing and supportive. And I've drawn on communities, so Facebook groups that were able to help me, an app called Peanut, which is for mums and like women to sort of support each other. And I don't know what I would have done without all of that, probably given up ages ago.
Yes, I think that's beautiful, and I'm happy that you shared like how you have support, even more support outside of your village on the internet, and just being able to communicate with other moms and hearing their stories, what they tried, what they did, what worked for them. I know that's such a huge thing just to have a community, let alone a village. So I would definitely say your whole situation, even though it was kind of rocky towards the end, but it was definitely a blessed one, because you had that's that near support, but then you also had outside support that can also be helpful. Definitely. So many moms, they come in and maybe they have like multiple kids back to back, like stair step 1, 2, 3, 4. They don't have the support at home and they just come in like dreaded with the anxiety and stress, but they're like, I don't have time to really focus on me because I have 3 little ones under the age of 5 or 4 little ones under the age of 5, or my oldest is 5 and my other 3 are just catching right up to each other. And they're like, I really don't even know whether I'm coming or going. Have you ever had a period of time where you're just like, who am I? And if you know who you are today, which is different than who you were when you had the kid, how did you get to a place where you're like, okay, I'm finally settled in my new role as a mom? And I feel like I'm getting back to myself, or either I'm creating a new self now.
Yeah, I definitely had a who am I identity crisis, especially because I didn't go back to work, because I've been heavily career driven for a long time. I got to quite a high position, or I was training to be a practitioner for a while. And then I was quite senior doing, you know, jobs within the hospital. So suddenly to then leave that career. But I mean, I chose to leave nursing because it was getting too stressful for me even before pregnancy. So I always say that actually having my little one has saved me from a mental health and a physical perspective. But after that, I had my little one. I concentrated on her for quite a few months. And then when things started to finally get, you know, better, and I was getting sleep and I was getting into it, I was starting to get that crash of, but what, who am I outside a mum? Because I, and it sounds really bad, a lot of people, and I love being a stay-at-home mum, but I want just a little something outside of it. You know, I love catering her, I love being with her, but I just wanted to still continue to have some semblance of a career, but just not in nursing. So I was kind of like, what am I doing? Who am I? You know, and I probably see my husband on meetings and be like, oh, I used to do meetings and this and that, you know, and I think it's really good, whatever mothers choose, whether they want to just be solely be the mother, be a stay at home. And I know that I'm privileged to be able to be in the position where I'm allowed to be a stay at home mum. So if I wanted to, and if I didn't want to go back to work at all, my husband would have been happy to say, you can be a stay at home mum, you don't have to. But I choose to want to just do something a little bit extra, even if it isn't sort of directly going back to work. But for a while, because I couldn't get any work, or I was trying to look for jobs and the job market has been that bad, especially because I'm a career changer, I basically don't really have a huge amount of qualifications in what I was trying to go into. It's oversaturated. I was just getting rejections left, right and center. And also going to interviews and people saying, well, you either do 40 hours or nothing. We need someone with 40 hours. I was like, but I'm not ready to leave my child for 40 hours. I didn't want to go in and just, you know, do all those hours. I just wanted a part-time job. But having part-time jobs, it's really difficult to get. Just getting a normal job is difficult. And people are like, well, we need you to commute all the way over here and spend all this time. I'm like, as much as I wanted some work for myself and to re-identify myself in my career, I also didn't want to leave my child in childcare for like 5 days a week for like 10 hours a day. So, which sounds a bit like, oh, well, I want my cake and I want to eat it. But actually, I think it's fair for women to want to have a balance between, which is why I have something called work-life balance. My podcast, because I think it's fair for women to want to have a balance between it. Because if you have two working adults in a household who are both working full time, it's just like, when do you get time to tidy or clean or do this and that? It's just too much in a day all the time.
It is.
You know?
It is.
So I lost my identity when it came to sort of my career, but then also I've always struggled with my body and my body image. And because I put on obviously weight from the pregnancy, and I was a little bit heavier than I normally am, because when I was nursing, I was eating sort of not the best food. That sounds really bad. They had a Burger King in hospital, which I was like,
yes,
it's burgers. I didn't eat from there, but I would have liked to see like a healthy sandwich shop or something. Anyway, I was eating quite badly because I didn't have time for exercise, etc. So I put on quite a lot of weight, and I felt in myself that I wasn't. And then obviously you get new things like stretch marks, and your belly's a little bit flabby maybe. So over the past year, to re-identify myself, I've just been working on trying to eat healthily, trying to exercise, you know, and making sure I have balance. And I've worked really, really hard to try and sort of get myself back to how I was in shape. You know, I've always loved being quite strong and fit, so I've worked on that. But so yeah, I've slowly got my identity back, and it's been good. I think it's a positive thing, but I love my little one, and I'd love to have a bit of both, if that makes sense.
Yes, and I think it's very important. I don't think a lot of people think about what it takes to be in healthcare. And I know I talk about this here and there on this podcast. I try not to make it about health at all, because that's what I do Monday through Friday. But a lot of people listening, or if you've been listening from the beginning, you know I'm a PA. I do psychiatry. I do substance abuse. And it's kind of like, the amount of hours the employers want you to work, it's almost like, I feel like we're in slavery again. The 12-hour shifts and their expectations about what they think you should be able to operate at, and the quality of care you're supposed to be giving patients, and the attentiveness and the attention to detail. Well, if I've been working over 8 hours, let alone 12 hours, and I halfway had a chance to get something to eat, and I haven't been drinking water, and I have 35 people on my schedule, how do you think I am supposed to deliver this quality care when I didn't give myself quality to be able to pour out into other people? And I just think it's insane. It is insane. So I will take you up on your offer, what we talked about before, because I honestly think that first you starting a podcast about it and creating awareness about it, but also talking about it even now, because some people don't have the luxury of being a stay-at-home mom. Some people do have to go back to work, or they have to do the whole thing by themselves, and they don't have that support. And some people are just like, how are we going to survive this? But the expectations with work mixed with the expectations from being a new time mom, that could just be so overwhelming to the mental health. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I know that over here, and with inflation and everything becoming more and more expensive, it's just ridiculous. It really is.
Well, I won't try and delve into it much, but because it's been part and parcel of my life so much. But when I talk about like sort of long hours, obviously we do in healthcare, but that also extends to so many other jobs, you know, and it's particularly relevant for parents, because, I mean, I talk a lot about work-life balances, but as a parent, you know, you have school hours from 9 to 3:30, but your employer requires you to be in work from 8 to 5. You know, where's the balance? How do you manage it all? Yeah, it's so expensive these days. You can't just not have a full-time job for a lot of people. It's not an option, which just angers me a bit, you know. And but that is so much compounded in healthcare, because I was seeing people work opposite shifts, like parents opposite shifts, and I was like, I don't want to do that. Yeah, you make a good point.
Yeah, and I hear about, like, I think it's Italy, somewhere in Europe, they shut everything down at 12 o'clock noon, so that people get to go home and spend time with their family, and they only work 4 days a week. And they really try to put an emphasis on mental health, but also spending time with your family. Because if you're at work all the time, when are you going to see your partner? When are you going to see your kid? When are you able to teach them and guide them like you want to? When you're at work all the time, and by the time you get off work, you're tired, but you're expected to come home clean, cook. And it's just like, what?
There's not enough hours in the day. They only made it 24 hours. We've got to sleep for about 8 of those hours as well. You know, it's a lot to undertake. So I was lucky that I get that option. But, you know, when I speak to a lot of other mothers, or I hear stories, it upsets me that this isn't the case that we have. I mean, I suppose in the UK, we've got a lot better rights and things, and maybe you guys have, but at the same time, it is becoming harder and harder to be able to maintain those rights. They're sort of slowly disappearing, as you know, because the job market's so bad, most employers have the pick of the, you know, you either take it or you don't have a job, you know, which is, you know, so there were so many times you get to the point when I'm giving my CVs out, I struggle because I'm like, I'm trying to think, I don't really want to reveal, I've got a big gap because of maternity leave.
Right.
Do I reveal that I have a child? Is that going to make them bias against me? You know, I'm so.
Right. Yes. And that's, it's sad that we even have to think about that, because you would think having a kid is just a normal thing and that they shouldn't be biased against it. But some people in some companies, they just are. And I don't know if it extends over your way. I know over here we have the EEOC and different things that, like, federal laws that kind of protect us. And I say kind of real lightly, kind of go through this process over here that they still slip through the cracks in some treatment employers and the way they do things. It's just so sad. But I would definitely say, now that your kid is one, what are some things that you are implementing in her life to be able to not only, like, teach her, guide her, get her ready for school and different things and starting to learn little things, but also life lessons and interactions with other kids and just in her growth? What things are you implementing in her life?
So I'm probably a bit overzealous about good, healthy food. So I try and get a healthy food. I do sometimes use the store pot. I'm going to admit that there's nothing wrong with that. But I try to give her good food. And generally she has what we have to eat. So we might eat, we're having a roast dinner. She's going to have, you know, a bit of chicken, a bit of this and that. That's one of the things I think is really important, because obviously good food will help their brains grow properly, that'll help them build properly. She gets plenty of playtime. Like, she probably in her mind is saying, not enough playtime. But I like to take her swimming. I've got her, you know, swimming once a week at least. We go, I think that's really important, good physical activity. She has a little friend. She does go, I'm lucky again also, even though I've not started working, but I'm kind of in this position where, like, if you don't take up the childcare, you don't have a childcare place, so then I can't start work, so it's a bit hard. I do have a spot where she goes for a couple of hours for a childminder. I clean and do a bit of my content creation. So she sees a lot of other children there. And then I go on sort of play dates with dates, well, I don't know if you call it dates, so we see another little kid and we go to soft plays. The other thing I try to do is read to her quite regularly, because I think that's really important. Although she sees me on my phone, so she gets quite attracted to that, but I try and keep her away from that, because, you know, I think that's probably not healthy. So we try to do reading, and then just sort of general health things, like making sure her teeth gets brushed regularly. But otherwise, I sort of do a mix of doing a lot of playing with her, but I also, now that she's one, try and let her do a bit of independent play, because she needs sort of, not all the time, but I want her to realise that I can't always sort of be sat her at her side playing with her. So she's got really good, actually, with just sort of playing, you know, with some teddies or some toys in a little sort of playpen that she has, and I'm just doing the dishes, and when I've done that, I'll come over and I'm like, okay, let's play, let's go out for a walk with the dogs. So we enjoy that. So fresh air, reading some books, you know, mixture of independent and also play with you and other children, good food, and I think you'll be fine. As for sort of discipline, I obviously, I'm not a smacker, don't worry. There was a controversial thing on the news of a while ago about smacking, but she does have quite a few tantrums, and I think she's now starting to learn, you know, the difference between, she can't always have everything that she wants. Slowly, I know she's still very young, so she's still learning a lot. She's at the younger age of one, just gone into one. So I'm kind of like a bit firm. I just say firmly, you know, no, you can't do that. And even if she doesn't understand at the time, she knows that if I keep bringing that in, that she starts knowing it, because she does sort of look. And then I sort of, she was throwing a tantrum the other day and she was like, no, I'm not going in this chair, blah, 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 blah. I sort of like, okay, you're probably not hungry yet, because you can't communicate to me right now. So that must be really frustrating. It's like me sort of not being able to speak properly, or, you know, really get my words out. I said, okay, I'm going to put you in a playpen. I'll let you just sort of play a little bit, and I'll let her sort of just think about things. And then I brought her back and then she ate. So It's kind of like just being firm but calm. And I think the hardest thing about sort of trying to deal with tantrums at this age when they're not able to express themselves is also being calm, because you're getting frustrated and thinking, oh my God, what's wrong with them? What's wrong with them? Why are they crying? Why are they doing this and this? And you're thinking, why won't you just listen to me? Why won't you eat your food? But they can't communicate. So I'm just like, as challenging as it can be, I'll just put her sort of somewhere where she's safe, and then I might sort of sit for 5 minutes, just rethink the situation through. Because I don't think there's any need for certainly not at one, but at any ages, I don't think there's any need for sort of any smacking or anything. I think it's just about, you know, being firm and calm. And so the more you fight with them, the more they want to fight with you, basically.
Yeah.
It's like when I try and get the ball out of my dog's mouth, they just keep pulling backwards. So like, if you just let go or loosen the grip, they'll sort of let go eventually. But yeah, I just, you know, firm and calm with tantrums, and then lots of love after that as well. You know, when she is sort of, you know, not throwing tantrums, or she's upset because maybe you can kind of tell when she's upset for something that she wants and is throwing a tantrum, as averse to she needs comfort. I give her lots of hugs, because I love hugging my little girl. That's the best thing about having children, is hugs and lots of cuddles.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yes. I'll have this be the last question, but what has being a mom and going through this whole ordeal taught you about you?
Oh gosh, that I do have a lot of strength, that you can do it. I suppose in general, I know you asked me about me. In general, I think you respect time so much more, because there is no time to do anything. But the amount of time I wasted before I had children is just like, I'm in awe of that. Like, how did I just not use that time to do something and get on with it? But as a person, I feel like I've become a lot stronger in myself. It's given me courage, because I think I'm a mum now, you know. If I don't look after my mental health and get the right treatment, or my physical health, there is a small person, or a person who's relying on me now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I need to make sure that I'm the best I can be, so that they have someone to come back to who can look after them and trust them. So yeah, I've taught myself that I can do it, you know, that things can get done and you can learn to be stronger. But I couldn't have done that without the amazing support I've had around me.
Yes. Well, I think I really, really, really want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing everything that you've shared. You have opened my eyes a lot to how things are different, because coming on in first, like initially when I was talking with you, I just like, yeah, you know, like the United States. And I'm like, no. Yes. Way and things are a little bit different in the UK, but it's different, but in a sense, like, the experience and things you went through kind of sort of the same, because we have moms that came on the show and they dealt with challenges and they had to show their resilience and build themselves up, or either they had support or they didn't. And I just appreciate the differences in every single story that I get a chance to hear, because I feel more well-rounded. And the more I do this and the more I get a chance to talk to more moms. And I guess I lied, because I have one more question. If you could say anything to anyone who's maybe expecting, or maybe they're planning, maybe they're like me, they're planning on having a kid one day, what type of advice would you give them, or what would you say to them?
Oh God, there's a couple of things. So I'll try and keep it brief. One thing, if you've got lots of clutter that you don't need, get rid of it, because you certainly won't care about that pair of socks that you might thought was important at the time, but it actually really isn't, because you've just got too much more to do, like laundry and feeding and everything. The second thing is, you don't need all the gadgets that people think you need. So one thing that stuck out to me is a lot of these microwave sterilizers that you need. I just got the Milton sterilizer. That's literally, it's one tablet that goes in and it keeps the water sterile for 24 hours, and you change it over. And because I was thinking, well, electric's quite expensive at the moment, I don't want to keep putting an electric sterilizer on. I just use this water. It's cold water in a tablet. It does absolutely fine. The same thing, you know. So just, you know, get the essentials, you know. Sometimes people go over the top a bit with everything that you need. And also, you don't have to go over the top with expense. I've got a secondhand pram that works properly and fine. I got secondhand clothes. My sister gave me some of the clothes from her baby. There's a lot you can buy on Vinted. I don't know if you have Vinted over there. Facebook Marketplace, they're all selling a huge haul of clothes. Don't need to go over the top. And they still look gorgeous. You could get like, amazing clothes from there. So yeah, you don't need to go over the top, and with breastfeeding or formula, it's whatever you decide that as long as the baby's fed, it's fine. Sorry,
Yes,
that's like
Lord.
three pieces of advice.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Because I think a lot of people just put a lot of stress on you, especially being a, you need this, you have to do it that way. I did it this way. My child's fine. If you do it this way, your child might not be fine. This isn't the right way. This is wrong. Like, it's just like, oh my God.
You don't need that Gucci dress for them. You
No,
just, in fact, she
no.
got so dirty, she just like ended up in, old clothes half the time. So, and you still got gorgeous photos of her. So, and treasure every moment because it goes really fast. Like just a minute ago, she was a newborn, and now she's already a 1 year old. And then, do everything if you want to treasure them. We did a photo shoot with her as a newborn. That's really special to us. But yeah, so that's some of my advice. That was like 3-4 bits. So sorry about that.
No, we appreciate all of it. Thank you so much. And if the audience wants to connect with you in any way or support you, follow you, where can they find you?
I'm on Facebook. My page is called Work Life Balance. And I have the TikTok called Work Life Balance, Instagram. Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I can't do any more social media than that. But I'm normally pretty active. You can message me on there. I'm normally pretty good at getting back. I'm always hoping to hear other people's thoughts and opinions, reviews on my podcast. My podcast is pretty, it is called Work Life Balance. It's a lot of rambling about lots of different things, but there's a lot of overarching themes like motherhood and breastfeeding and sort of fitness and things. So, that's all on Spotify, Amazon Music, all the main places that you can find it, YouTube, etc. And I'm always looking to hear people's thoughts on different subjects that I talk about. So, yeah, I'm very friendly and
Wonderful.
approachable.
Yes. Y'all, please go and follow, like, subscribe, and definitely give her podcast a listen. Who knows? I may be on there soon. But definitely check her out, Miss Jessica Sharma. I thank you again for taking so much time out of your day just to come talk to us and give us differences, different perspectives. You shared your experience and enlightened us all. And I just can't thank you enough. So I really appreciate you.
It's been a
I really.
pleasure. I've loved it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And for you guys listening, thank you again for listening. Please make sure that you follow us at Resilience by Faith Podcast on Facebook and Resilience AX Faith POD on Instagram. And I will see you guys on the next episode. Bye, guys. Bye, Jessica.
Thank you.
You're welcome.